Hey, you're stuck in traffic with Wolf Gorlick. A couple minute riff on IT and IT security. Today, talking about application whitelisting. So, fun fact. I love tailgating. I can't help it. There's a door. It's a locked door. There's a list of who's allowed and who's not. I can't help but see if I can get in. And in my defense, in the meeting that I was in today, the guy did say, here's when I'm going to be in the office. Call me when you get here or see if you can get to my office. So I think that's like having tacit permission, right? But I don't know. It reminds me of any access control and the ways access control is implemented and get bypassed. Because, of course, any access control has to weigh who's getting in and who's getting out by the risk of who's getting in and who's getting out by the enforcement cost. Right? Cost and risk. You're always balancing it. And the same thing holds true for application whitelisting. Whereas you have a list of apps that are allowed to run and everything else is blocked. Or maybe it's the other way around if you got a blacklist, but you get the point. So the tip is implement application whitelisting. It's fantastic, but much like with the door, make sure that you've got a good balance between cost of implementing and the risk you're avoiding. I'll give you two examples of organizations that have implemented successfully with models that I think are pretty interesting. The first is the low-cost model. It's the door that's locked with the swipe card that you can still pretty much, if you're determined, walk around. And this is how it works. They're using application whitelisting software. The application whitelisting software checks new apps that are installed or want to run. And it checks against the reputation filter. So if it's known malware or known bad, you're not getting in. Otherwise, if it's not been run yet, not been approved by the organization, it asks the user, hey, do you approve this? Click to approve it. And once it's approved, that approval gets registered by who approved it, and it's now okay. You are trusting the users. So the downside is there's still a chance of users allowing stuff to run that they shouldn't. The upside is, it's able to screen out most malware, most ransomware. Most users are pretty savvy about when they click that button. And it's got a very low cost because that cost of running is spread out across the entire organization. It's back to the thing I talk all the time about having a volunteer security team, a volunteer firefighting team. There you go. Second organization has taken the exact opposite approach. Second organization has application whitelisting. It's on all systems. It's all over the place. They've got a team dedicated to checking these apps. And if someone wants to run anything, they submit a ticket. There's an SLA that'll get checked within 2 days. Folks check it. Usually takes about a day to check. Make sure it's okay, runs in the sandbox, does some analytics, ensures it's not a bad app, and then approves it. Or, you know, in rare cases, blocks it. So pros here is that it's a very regulated environment. It's a very well-known environment. They got really strong access controls and malware isn't getting in, period. Cons, it's expensive to run. So application whitelisting is possible. There's two different models I've seen, the two different extremes. There's, of course, a variety of other ways to do it. But if you're thinking about implementing and you want to get started, look at the low model. And then if the risk warrants it, ratchet it up. Or, hey, if you got a bunch of people staying around, who doesn't have a bunch of staff? Go ahead. Run everything. And if you need to, register back down. That's it for me. Have a good one.